to take an intro.
Hey, how you doing, honey? How you doing today?
Good, good.
How was the kids? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. I like the blue balls.
Blue Balls Pod.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Blue Balls. Season 10.
The blue ball. The blue balls.
Season 10. 10.
Like a fully completed download on the Apple iTunes store. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. My name is Jake Beckard, and I'm your intrepid co-host, and I'm joined this week, as every week, by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how are you this week?
back down to earth. I don't know. I feel like it's a busy time with the weather being okay again, and...
Oh my God, the weather was so beautiful today. I sat outside and called my family. That's how nice the weather was. You know what I mean?
Lord. Yeah, reconnect with loved ones. Certainly like a bear out of hibernation activity.
Mm-hmm, most definitely. I told my brother about all kinds of stuff. We talked about my mom's birthday's tomorrow. I gotta figure out what I'm gonna get for my mom's birthday. It's tomorrow. She's so bad at... I hope she doesn't listen to this. I don't know why she would. She's so bad at gifts, so I don't really feel that bad being bad at giving her gifts. She struggles. They all struggle. I'm going to pitch this year for Christmas that we do a sort of like one big gift per... Like, it's a, like basically the whole event is a Secret Santa, so we can just focus on one human and then spend a bunch of money on that one human instead of accidentally spending a bunch of money on all of the humans in the network.
My mom is... accidentally good sometimes, because what she does,
speak
is,
on that,
she's retired, so she just goes to the thrift store a lot, and she'll just grab whatever is men's clothing and send it to me, and usually it is the ugliest clothes I've ever seen in my life, which I then immediately donate to like refugee families and like it's something. And
are you, is it your political position, Trey, that refugees should look like shit? That they should have to wear clothes that make them look like assholes?
It's my political position to do that if it's free, dog. I did the same. I was growing up. And then every once in a while, I'll get some heat. I'll get some fire. Accidentally. Like when my mom got me in high school a Papa Boba Jupe Senegal jersey. I was like, where the fuck did you find this? This is the best. This is like the most fire jersey I've ever seen in my life. Rest in peace to him. And also like a Qatar jersey she found randomly. I was like, this is heat. I love it.
That's so wild.
Every once in a while, I'll get something good. But most of the time, it's like the ugliest thing you've seen in your life. It is a true eldritch horror of... printed shirts or whatever.
My mom for Christmas this year got me rain boots that my wife had already gotten me from, because they are the only rain boots that were available at DSW. We stay loyal. And she got Serena a subscription to New York Times Cooking, which she already had.
It's the thought that counts.
I'm saying, listen, she makes a great... I love going back to my parents' place for Christmas. It's lovely. She makes a great home for the holidays. It's everything else is icing on top.
I spent with your family once.
Yeah, that's right. When they came to the city, that was a lot of fun. I don't think I'll ever top for gifts wise for my parents. I got my dad a Lego set of the Seinfeld set of the Seinfeld apartment. And he couldn't fucking believe it existed. his jaw was on the floor. He'd truly been caught unawares. So we spent the entire day just watching Seinfeld episodes and making the set.
You reminded me of the worst gift I got from my now estranged father. And this can give you a bit of an idea. This was late 2000s. So Manchester United was, you know... one of the most hate... I probably, as a teenager, did not hate things in my life more than Manchester United. And my father got me a long-sleeve Manchester United jersey.
Hysterical. And
I was like, you don't understand. You might as well have just given me a bag of shit. I do not... I'm not going to wear this ever. I didn't say that. I was being nice, of course. but I didn't try it on. I didn't.
It's honestly a classic, like estranged father gift. You know what I mean? It's a. Yeah. There's a line in the play that I just did where it's like, I had a dad. He came by one day with a doll and some wrong sized clothes. You know, like it's a real classic to get a jersey exactly in the of the like team you hate the most.
Someone listening, imagine if your father gave you a Red Bull jersey. Like, you're not going to wear it ever.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I am trying the least amount that I possibly could to engage with your interests. So, like,
give me a full jersey or something. I don't know.
Mostly who we're talking to are new fathers or, you know, fathers within, would say, the last 5 to 10 years would be my guess as far as demographics. So if you really want to fuck with your kids, get them Red Bulls merch. That'll be fun.
Also, don't. Or else they won't talk to you when you're old.
Dre, this is we're extending the beginning sequence here because we've got a game to talk about that nobody wants to talk about. A 2-0 loss to Colorado at home asterisk over at Citi Field. You were there for this match, Dre. I was not. It was a soggy evening and a soggy performance. What the fuck happened?
We lost. I don't know.
What was so different? I mean, like, the usual conversion woes, to be sure. But, you know, more specifically, what was not connecting that's been connecting that ended our lossless streak?
This team clearly has, like, an issue falling asleep at the beginning of matches. I don't know what it is. It's no longer... a coincidence, it just is now regular enough where it's a pattern. And players know this. It's just they don't get into games fast enough. And it costs them. And I don't know how to change that. I don't know what needs to happen for them to start off better, but it's certainly not this. I think clearly, like, the weather had something to do with that. I hate using weather as an excuse specifically, much like I hate when teams use our field as an excuse, because both teams play on it, and both teams had to play in the rain and the cold. So that's not the excuse. It's more so like it limits what you can do, and some teams are just better dealing with it than others. And also mentally, if you're not a mentally strong team or tough team or a team that is not necessarily always in rhythm or has different personnel week to week, like, it can certainly affect you more than it can the other team on the field. And that's just something the team needs to be more cognizant of in these moments. I think those are big deals. Obviously, we were over our skis. But
before we get into that, sure. I actually want to pause on the weather for a second, because this is a thought that I was having as I was watching from afar that I realized I know nothing about, and I bet that I'm not the only one who's listening to this who feels this way. What is how unpleasant physically is it to play in the rain? How much is, like, you know, like, kit technology or, you know, like what is going on in these players' shoes? Aside from, like, the slipping and falling, aside from, like, or maybe including things like... unpredictability of ball movement or, right, like, weights of touch or shit like that. Like, what are you actually dealing with on the pitch when you're playing in rain like that?
I mean, you mentioned, the biggest things you do notice is the things you mentioned, like how the ball moves, passing can sometimes be too fast or too slow. It's just not normal and not in your rhythm. And if it's windy like it was, the ball travels differently, and that can certainly be something. I mean, this is all stuff we talked about after the MLS Cup. But something I didn't mention, and just to answer your question, I think it's good, is for me personally, it's like vision. Is the rain getting in your fucking eyes? Both, like, the rain constantly, like, dripping over your eyes or getting in your eyes and having to wipe your brow or your eyes, and also, like, not being able to see as far. Like, your peripheral vision gets a little fucked up. Things get a little cloudier and it becomes a little more difficult. Like, I think that's just outside of everything else. I think that's a big one for me personally. It's like, and also, like, it's when you're running, like, yeah, the rain gets in your eyes a little bit more, and that sucks. But then when you're standing still, you really feel like the rain sogging you down. Like, it's not really... Rain isn't really a huge issue. Obviously, like, you know, in England, they fucking play in the rain all the time. It's like getting used to the ball movement is the biggest thing. But also, it's not that much of an issue when you're focused and playing and in the zone. You don't pay that much mind to it. It's more so when you're standing still, when there's stoppages of play, it can really take you out of the game much easier than if it wasn't raining. And then outside of that, yeah, I'd say like vision and stuff.
The other thing that I think about is weight, you know? I mean, it's a lot like if anybody's ever fallen into water when they were fully clothed. It's just harder to... Clothes take on more weight. It's like training with weights on. So it's not just, right, the ball. It's also the way that you physically move. And I think, again, like if you're not used to it, maybe you are used to it and your body sort of tunes to the extra effort that you have to put in. But there's something more fatiguing, both like... morally and physically, I think, about playing in those conditions. All of this is not maybe to excuse the way that this game went, but maybe there's something there about the youth of this team and about, like, you know, we've been having sluggish starts in general, but to sort of extra weigh down, it's just another obstacle that feels rather in line with the obstacles that we're already seeing and feeling.
Yeah, like, and to the same point, you want to talk about obstacles that were present during the game that are unusual, that affects both teams equally, but one team not dealing with it as well. I would say this game really should have just been 1-0, and that second goal I don't really put a lot of stock into. I'm not going to ding NYCFC that much when it comes to that second goal. Obviously, it's like counter to the run of play because we just had to bail out to try to equalize. But more specifically, the fucking field, that the infield was dead grass and the ball moved so much more differently on the infield of the baseball field than anywhere else on the field. Like the ball died. The ball moved 75% as far as fast when it was moving on that surface, and it was bouncing, and like that fucking sucks. So That second goal, that starts because a misplaced pass to the fucking infield. And then the inlet pass, the pass in to the box, the fucking forward overran the ball and like accidentally made a great play on the ball because he ran so far ahead of where the pass was going that he shielded the New York City defender from getting to the ball. So, like, it was just a calamity of outside forces that fucked that up. So I'm not going to put too much stock into that goal either.
Sure. Fair enough. Well, so then what do you put the stock into? I mean, was it just not having... In that first goal, who do you hold responsible more than anybody else?
I don't know. I'd have to see it again. I haven't seen that first goal in a long time. Like, frankly, to be 100% honest, I don't know. I know it was a wonder goal. I know we could have done better setting. I mean, similar to last week, right? Like, the idea of not being in the game at the beginning of the game and fucking up when the team has a counter and swings in a cross. Like, our defense has been solid. And they were really solid for most of this game, obviously last game and the week before. Like, defensively, the defensive philosophy and spine and shape and everything and intensity is where we want it to be and where we think this team can have. You know, it's certainly the most solid part of this team. I mean, you look at our recent defensive record compared to other teams. We're good in that sense, and I think individually we prevented a lot of chances through individual efforts defensively in this match, but it doesn't matter if you can't wake up and start the game off in that way, and that's something Burke and Martins and our wingbacks have to get better at, is just starting in a place where you're ready for anything. And you know, you hope they know that and they'll correct that. But obviously it leaves you at a huge disadvantage and a hole to crawl out of 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah. And unlike, I think, the last time that we saw that hole crawling out, we didn't see like an aggressive or like hold the course response from NYCFC as much as we did a ton of disorganization, right? Like a ton of sort of like juvenile and frantic play. I mean, I think that there was not there just wasn't a lot of like good looks on the ball. There wasn't a lot of like good action with the ball at the feet of these players, and that feels, I don't know, it's sort of boring to say over and over, oh, it's a mindset issue or whatever, but like chances in the first 30 minutes were diminutive.
It might be boring,
at
but
best.
It's not it might be boring, but it's certainly accurate. I mean, that's, this game is mindset. We'll get into it. I want to talk about what Colorado did.
Talk about what Colorado did.
I thought it was smart. Like, oh, Chris Armas, he sucks, blah, 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 all those memes. But I don't know, dude. They have as many wins as of now than they had all of last year. And that's something. And they're missing their best player. So Vines was questionable. I thought he wasn't going to play. He ended up toughing it out, and good for him. I don't think he was necessarily super impactful in this match, but he at least played. But the biggest thing was Georgi Mihailovic being out. And
right, this is what you texted about, being like, okay, this is going to be.
We talked about it last match that he was going to be huge.
Yeah, exactly. And so it felt like it should have been a cakewalk from go.
You would think so. And then they do this smart thing where they almost run like a hybrid. They usually run like a 4-3-3 with Georgi up front, you know, dictating where the ball goes to the front three attackers, and he does a great job of doing that. Regardless of how well they finish their chances, which is not well, he usually has to do a line share of a lot of the work. But they, you know, Armas switched to, it looked kind of like a 4-4-2, but really was like a 4-2-2-2, where he allowed, essentially, he slotted in an extra holding midfielder to move Cole Bassett into that creative role. And he's not the most, we didn't see like Cole Bassett the next fucking Xavi or Iniesta when he was on the field, but we did see him fully capable, and something I have not seen from him before, but certainly he's a very talented player, or flexible player more accurately, where he can really fit that role a lot easier just transferring his skill set. Like, he wasn't like the pinging sharpshooter magician 10, but he used kind of the hard-nosed dog, bulldog energy that he usually has, in that he transferred that mentality to playing the 10 for them, which worked because, like, you're running downhill, and if you just catch moments where Keaton and Sands are split wide, then he can he just took those moments, and it just caught. It's not only like, obviously they didn't capitalize on those because our defense played really well, but when Cole Bassett had the ball and he could move vertically so quickly and so aggressively, it just killed time. Was the most valuable thing he did, was just deflate our team when we had the momentum. Like the end of the first half, I think NYCFC started to find themselves at the end of the first half and some of the beginning of the second half. But any time Cole Bassett was like on the ball, he could just move it forward, and it was really impressive how, just to like deflate the team, kill the game, taking time on set pieces, taking time on these long throw-ins, using long throw-ins, by the way. We see Armas do it. We saw Lassane do it when DC was here. Like, it seems like former Red Bull coaches know to disrupt our style of play by like using throw-ins as set pieces, and it works. Like, we saw Charlotte last week foul a bunch to kill clock. Like, dictating tempo is something our opponents are doing effortlessly as a way to combat our own style, and it's just working so well against us. And it's just, It's almost like the playbook's out there on how to beat us, you know? Dive wide early in the match, throw in crosses until you score, and then if you do, build a low block and find a way to waste time and kill momentum. And that's what they did, and that's what a lot of teams have done to us this year.
Well, and it feels like the thing that you're saying, or that you're, the point that you're coming to, is that the kind of the, okay, sure, you can keep on working on ways to penetrate the low block, which is a lot easier on baseball fields, but that, you know, whichever on the city you're playing, but that overall, the real solution to that issue is not to go down so fucking easy in the first third, right? Is to have more more rigor and more sort of like, this game is 30 minutes long and I'm going to play it like it's 30 minutes long and I'm going to hold the line and make some fucking chances out of at like some realistic. I'm not going to warm into the match, right? Because otherwise the game is entirely in their hands from then on. Is that fair?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's fair. And, you know, the transitions into perhaps the big, we've mentioned many reasons why we've lost this match, but perhaps the biggest is this team's inability to break down a low block. Now, in MLS, it's hard. Like, I'm sorry, there's just not a lot of teams that can do it effortlessly. And I think NYCFC, on a few occasions, did it well. But they can't do it consistently enough. There's not enough teams that can. Where it's just an easy way to, just with the personnel we have, right? Like Santi Rodriguez. Can we talk about Santi Rodriguez? I feel like
we can certainly talk about Santi Rodriguez.
I feel like he's certainly a pressure point in this match. He just won Player of the Month as voted by fans. I would have voted Matt Freese, but
okay, Mr. Contrarian.
No, you know why I would? Because I'm privileged enough to vote for MLS Player of the Month. And I thank my lucky stars they give this fucking podcast a vote. But, you know, Matt Freese was short.
End dipshit suffrage.
They give you a short list of like 8 players or so of like, yeah, vote for Player of the Month, but you should probably vote for one of these guys. And Matt Freese was on that list. And he was the only goalkeeper on the list. I was like, fuck yeah. So I voted him second for Player of the Month because I was.
Did he
scared.
Win? Has he won Player of the Month already? I don't. This is
for NYCFC. I don't think so. No.
Really, that's a big surprise to me.
I don't think so. Maybe the end of last year. I'm not sure, but I'd have
surely.
To double check.
I mean, you'd think like in the first half of this, or the first couple of months of this season, he was basically the only bright spot we had to talk about on a week to week basis. You would imagine that like there's not a lot else to commend on the field, except for Matt Freese. But it's not as if he doesn't get his flowers from the fans.
Sure. And frankly, he made some big saves in this game yet again. We're not surprised.
Yeah, it's true.
But
Santi's the one who won, and he's the one you want to talk about.
Yes, and it's not undeserving. Like, I'm not shit. I don't even know why I brought it up, frankly. That's, like, mean. Because he's been great, right?
Yes.
But he's great in this specific way. Obviously, I wrote about him in fucking 2020. Feels like 4 years ago because it was. And, you know, he's just, it's hard to know what he can be because it's so clear what he is and that he should really lean into those things. But that's almost, there's some limitations. And it's like, if a team goes into a low block, the 10 you want on the field is not necessarily Santi because he is great. He's one of the best players in the league at dribbling in open space against defenders. But in tight spaces, he's one of the worst. And we saw that on full display. And why is he one of the, like, why would that be the case? Firstly, it's like his profile. Like, he is a vertical player. He is not a maxi sit and be creative and be a magician. He is a downhill creator where he can make one-touch passes. He knows where to slip in balls. He knows when to shoot. He knows when to dribble around someone so he can create a chance. Like, I'm fully confident Santi is a very unique but very talented number 10, and we're lucky to have him, and I'm happy he's on this team. But when we're facing a low block, it becomes this thing where he's just forced into a position he doesn't have a lot of experience in, and his skill set doesn't necessarily match. And so we saw multiple times him running into things. And why can't he get past that? Why is there some kind of barrier to his ceiling of becoming a more creative 10? And this is where we come back all the way to mentality. This was the classic Santi game of the team is down, and when the team is down for more than 30 minutes or so, instantly he becomes a fucking sourpuss, man, and it sucks. And it sucks to watch. And I don't know where that changes or what, but it's certainly like, you can talk about player profile all you want and the things he's good at. I think he's talented enough to be good at almost anything, but mentally he's not. It's like he either wants to play hero ball and gets frustrated at himself when it doesn't work, or he sees other people trying to make things happen and gets frustrated when that doesn't work. And it's like, man, we just, oh, it could have been a bad day. But just like we mentioned the whole circumstance of this game, it's not coincidence. It's become a pattern where we need Santi's mentality more than anyone else. And like, we can't have you arguing with your teammates or fucking throwing your hands up or walking after a turnover. Like, just fucking get it together and just squeeze a little more out of that lemon and make a little lemonade, my guy. And it's frustrating to see for a player that good and that talented.
Yeah,
that was a huge takeaway for me. I don't know how you felt.
Well, I think it's a little bit of a, it blows a little hole in the, something that we've been talking about on the podcast the last few months is the change in Santi that we've seen, which I think, right, like this is vintage Santi. It's an element of his game that's always been true about him. And I think that some of us had hoped that like with this sort of transition into more of a team leader, more of a team mascot, right? Like more of the front man, more of the get it done man, that it would go away. But there are some matches where it doesn't, where it can't, right? Like at a certain point, you're asking a tiger to change his stripes. This is a temperamental player. You know, I don't say that to be fucking, I don't know, patronizing,
It comes from a good place. He wants to win.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But wanting to win means like finding a way to sustain that desire and that belief, right? And championing the match the whole way through. But it felt like that just wasn't possible in this game.
Yeah, good gravy. Tough. But what
is there anybody else? Yeah. What else? What else is worth talking about? Malachi got a little attention, action.
I saw a lot of hubbub about Nick Cushing's subs, and it's like, I don't know, man. I know this is a rare opinion, and I might be, and I'm probably wrong, but I'm okay with some of the sub work he made. I mean, like, it wasn't working, and you have to make a change. And for all the whining and complaining we saw about Nick Cushing not making subs early enough in previous matches throughout his tenure here, I appreciated him willing to switch things up in the 55th minute, like so early for him.
Subs is just somewhere that, like, subs is like venting room. You know what I mean? Like, there's never
100%.
It almost exists exclusively so that people have something to complain about, right? It's where coaching. It's the only place where coaching is visible in the 90 minutes that players are on the field. And so, of course, it's just like it's beaten to death. But talk about why you were satisfied. I mean, aside from just like, okay, overhaul time, which I think probably, yes, is a responsible choice. Why do you think that the particular subs he made felt like they were reasonable attempts at winning this game back?
Firstly, I think because of Malachi's personal demeanor of being the sweetest, nicest boy, which is entirely true. He is on the field between the whistles one of the most aggressive players we have. One of the most, like, one-on-one, he has the ball. He's going to go at players more often than not. And, like, okay, if you're losing a game that you think you should be winning and your fucking team is stuck against a low block, why not throw in the most aggressive? I mean, he is the most aggressive player on the team. I'm more than happy to say that. It's just, there's just some kind of cognitive dissonance when you're talking about sweet little Malachi Jones, but that's who he is. And so I appreciated that. And also, like, I think Keaton's extremely important to this team. I think he's one of the best. He's a field tilt monster. He's one of the best transition passers and midfielders in this league that has had in the last 5 years. But I don't know if this game was calling for that at that moment. We needed a more disruptive presence, and Perea at least offers some of that. And he needs minutes. Like, he's not happy not playing, frankly. And, like, you have to rotate midfielders at some point. I don't know. I think Hannes Wolf, honestly, like, did fit this game. Maybe that's the sub I would question. But, again, I don't want to be too overly critical on subs. But I think Hannes, like, is someone that can dribble in tight space and is a chance creation possession value machine, just in how he can bring the ball into dangerous areas and things like that. So that would have been nice to see. To see him do a little more work regardless.
But even Hannes, you don't see him go out until the 77th minute. And who do you bring in? Exactly who anybody would be clamoring to see in the 77th minute. Julian Fernandez. You know what I mean? If anyone's going to wake the game back up, there it
is. Sure. No, I get it. I know, it's hard. Look, I understand, deciding between all these fucking wingers we have on this team is tough. Because you have to both build consistency, but also grow young players, but also make sure everyone's happy. Those three things, you will always fall short in one of them. So it's a big conundrum playing up there. Not to be all shitty. I was really shitty to... I feel like I was overtly shitty to Alonso Martinez last game when he was our savior, and I kept mentioning the things he was not good at. But then we get this game, and it just becomes clear, what'd he play, 24 minutes or something? And he had 4 touches.
Jesus.
Not good enough. And it's like, oh, but he didn't have service. Okay, well, sometimes strikers can make their own service. I mean, that's an indictment both on him and everyone else.
Yes, but it's also for sure. But once again, it's that thing of like, you have to keep in mind who this guy actually is, as opposed to the myth that we've built up. It's so easy to do the thing of like, what is this team if this team is a star team?
It's Gabriel Siegelman all over again. The guy scores clutch goals, and it's like, we can't let those clutch goals forget who this player is.
Let me counterpoint that just for the fun of it, which is to say, I feel like there's a little...
I'm on an island, I understand.
There's a little less... it's there, okay? I'm not gonna contest that there's more than is appropriate an amount of Martinez love, because the goals are there, and that's just what soccer is, right? Like, jerseys get sold when goals hit the back... or when balls hit the back of the net. But I also think he's more... He's more productive and has more individual hustle than Gabe did when he was playing for this team. He feels less to me like a USL player than Gabe did on this, even in his best moments on this team, and like somebody who is really growing into his power. But that doesn't mean that he's not still in process. That doesn't mean that he's not still building.
You're right. I'm gonna concede a little bit, because we're not asking. We're probably getting what we're asking for Martinez, and perhaps I'm just overemphasizing his limitations because of the desperation of the situations he's being put in, right? Like, he's good enough for the role we ask him to be. It's just, it sucks that we don't have a number one, which brings me to my second to last. We're going long, but we're going normal. We have to talk about Bakrar yet again. It's just...
I was surprised to see him get the start.
I thought you were clamoring for it, no?
I was, but I was still surprised about it. I would have said conventional wisdom says he doesn't start in this match. I'm not saying that that's what the move is. I just also think that this is the worst possible match for him to... Like, it's certainly not the match in which he was going to get whatever anybody is trying to get out of him from another start.
Here's my problem. Obviously, I think he's very good at everything that's not scoring. I think his effort is off the charts. I love his defensive play from the front. I think he makes some great runs. I think he had some great runs in this game. I think he had some great moments on the ball. But if you've looked this up or know this, then tell me and don't ruin the game. But the one question game is... how many shots on target does Bakrar have in the last 5 matches?
Two.
Ooh, you're wrong. It's 1.
Oy vavoy. Like,
that's not good enough, my guy. No. That's not good enough. It's not. And you know why? I was skeptical to this. Like, there was moments where you saw, like, Micha, he had one run down the middle where he was carrying the ball with 2 defenders on him, and he didn't pass to Bakrar. And I'm like, that's a young defender's problem. It doesn't matter how how deep in the fucking hole your striker is. You have to pass to them in that moment. And he didn't. And so he fucked up. And that is Micha's fault. But it is important to note that perhaps Micha in the back of his mind was thinking about, you know, one shot on target in five matches. I mean, it's bad. It's bad. Tavon Gray had more shots on target in his whatever minutes he played in this match than Bakar has in the last five games. And that's not good enough. And he, is he getting service? No, he's not getting enough service. But that might be because he's not shooting the ball on target. Like, it's hard. There's a balance of... I think this would have been... You're right. I think this would have been the game where maybe he could have subbed down and or we had someone else there and it just wasn't there. And I don't know what you do next. I think I'm at the point where it's like, okay, obviously, like, emotionally he was... It's been tough, and I think he can be a good... like, I'm not going to back away from me thinking he can be a good striker in this league. I just don't think it's where we are as a team at the moment, whether it's people not getting service to him or him not taking the shots on target. It's just not benefiting the team, period. It is a negative, an obvious negative. And that doesn't mean... I think it's important to just separate those things as, like... Can he be a good player in the future? Does he have a lot of talent? Yes. Is he right to play right now in the state he's in? Absolutely not. It's not good enough. It sucks, man. He's a good guy.
Yeah, I know. I know it. But we all know it. We're all feeling it.
Colorado without Georgi Mihailovic at home and you can't get a shot on target is not... You can't do that, my guy.
Is this the end of your Bakar story? Are you now out until you're in?
No. I'm still saying, like, you want to bring him off the bench? I'm cool with that. You want to... We just have to try something. We're in the middle of trying things anyway. We've had consecutive wingers start, what, only once? Only two games in this whole season? Like, if we're going to be trying shit, let's try shit.
Would be nice is if on this next little stretch, you know, now that we're getting some away matches in, if there's just something unlocked simply by dint of distance, you know, simply by dint of space, all of a sudden there's space for Bakar to operate. Maybe he comes in as a sub in the next match and, you know, he's already been written off, or maybe we're down a goal or something like that. And there's just like they've not planned for what it looks like to have a Bakar sub, and he's just got room to move and he crushes it. It's a laser. It's a laser to the upright corner or something. You know, and then it turns into a story where Bakar only scores goals away and everybody else only scores goals at home, and we get goals and goals and goals.
Dog, we'll win the Shield if that's the case, I promise.
That would be a dream. I mean, is it too late to win the Shield? I think it might be.
Yeah. No, it is. We'll see.
Good season.
Only other thing is I think our wingbacks played as well as they could. And I'm impressed with the growth of Micha. If you remember how Micha was at the beginning of last year, I think you'd say he's a great player now. If you look at the beginning of last year for Kevin O'Toole, I think you'd say he's a fantastic player now.
For sure.
Comparatively. I think he's grown into that drafted player to MLS stalwart role. I think it's good. It's impressive. And then Tavon Gray came in. We haven't seen him in a long time. And he was... I'm going to, again, be on an island here. Tavon was great.
Yeah, talk about energy. Talk about talk about trying to lift the team up by their bootstraps. Tavon is one of those players you can sort of rely on for that. I mean, particularly when he's subbed in as opposed to when he's on the field a long time and then gets temperamental like all of the other young boys on this team.
Yeah, Tavon's temperament is different. I mean, yeah, he'll get temporarily suspended by the league for saying things, but it's... I think it's all positive, you know.
He gets suspended for being too positive.
Whatever. What he got suspended for, I had no problem with.
All right. Let's go. Finish it.
I talked to him after the match. He's always the last person out of the locker room. Always. He has been since for what, 4 years now, whatever. He's always been the last one, so I had to wait a long time, but talk to him after. And I talked to him because what we saw from Tavon in this match, what, four crosses early crosses from that right back position into the box, and three of them found a target. Two of them, Malachi. Malachi had a wide open chance because of Tavon. I mean, that connection was great. Talk about aggressiveness. Malachi running to the fucking far post every single time Tavon had the ball. Love that instinct from both of them, by the way. And it was, and we've never seen Tavon cross the ball as well as he did in this match. And I talked to him after. I'm like, where did that come from? And he said, watching the game, I saw what we were missing. And I decided that's what I was going to do. Because how do you break down a low block? You have to make the defenders fucking defend. How do you do that? Balls into the fucking box. Whether from the sides, whether through balls in, whether over the top. You have to make defenders defend if they're going to be in a low block. Because that's the only way you're going to get chances, second chances, things like that. So I love that IQ from Tavon from the bench. I love it. That's it. Over. Game over. We lost. We suck.
That's a hot thing to say. I just want to say, you know, that is a sexy, that's a sexy post-match comment from Tavon Gray. Man knows how to be after your own heart. Trey, is it talking points time?
Mm-hmm.
Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points.
You know what we should do for a talking points? Not for a talking points theme, but I'm listening to a the ice cream truck jingle outside my door. Are other cities here, talking point number one? That was the talking points theme. These are the talking points. Talking point number one. Do other cities have the same ice cream jingle as we do?
I don't think so. Because it's owned by Mr.
That's an underrated element of New York culture. You know, that's a we
guess. I got a great surprise for you. 2 years ago, there was someone made a drill remix of that song, and
of course they did.
Fucking, it's a fucking banger. And if I can find it, I'll send it to you. But I've looked for it before, and I've lost it. So hopefully, I can find it.
Did you see I don't know why you would have seen this, but the NYU Local, the student blog that was very popular in my day, but did a feature on Tommy Richmond that I saw on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Virginia, stand up.
This is what I'm saying. Virginia in the house. Woodbridge in the house. Trey, here's our real first talking point. Can we get the drama out of the way first? Lots of buzz on Twitter.com.
Fine.
Unpack it. Do your job. About Jovan Mijatovic's family, about rumors, about, you know, about inside the clubhouse tensions. Lots of people saying Chanel was right. Goofy shit. What is all this about for people who are less online than we are? God bless you and keep you.
Okay. There's things to be... It's important to say, like, what's real and what there should be concerns about and what are logic leaps or what are leaps away from clear A to B logic, right? What happened was Jovan was not in the starting 11 and he was not on the bench. The only information we have to explain why is Glenn Crooks in his pregame show mentioning, and it might have been only a maybe or a might, I'm not sure, I have not double checked this, that it may have been a heel injury that he sustained in the last day of practice. Now, my understanding, the last day of practice was Friday, so injury reports are due by 5 p.m. the day before of the game, or 3 p.m. something. And Jovan was not on the injury report. Now, a player can be healthy and then scratched because they don't want to force an injury, especially it's an 18-year-old that you spend $8 million on. So I'm not going to excuse that from the realm of possibility. But it is interesting that he was not on the bench and there was no public mention of why he was not.
Mm-hmm.
After the match, look, I saw him. He was, whatever, joking around, hanging out with Micha, having a good time. I was sent by, of course, our retired friend, our teenage friend. No Drake. source who sent me some interesting comments he saw on Instagram from someone he did not know, but he just saw that the comment was liked by someone who followed Jovan, or that Jovan followed. The comment was in Serbian, and oh shit, I didn't bring it up. I'm not prepared.
I had it in a second. I can't give you the translation, but I can give you the tweet that you tweeted out.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, I tweeted the translation.
Jovan obviously isn't as likable to the coach as Bakrar, whom he brought in. That's why he's not giving him the opportunity to show the great talent he has.
Okay, so yeah. So I, you know, source gives me something. Yeah, I'll put it out there. And I found it interesting after doing, it took me a fucking hour to figure this out because I'm old and I don't know how Facebook works on your phone if you don't have the app or whatever. I found out it was, that was his grandma. And it's, so that's, on its, on the base level, that's nothing. I am tweet, and I feel bad because I'm tweeting out fucking just nothing. I mean, it's just a woman complaining. Not to specify, it's because she's a woman. Wow, that did not come out as I wanted it to.
Boy, you know. Okay, well then we can wrap it up right there because if all we're basing this on is a woman complaining. Lord knows they do enough of that.
Okay, it is not just it could just be, and all we have right now is that it is a person complaining. That happens to be a woman, doesn't matter. I only say that because it's his grandma. I'm just trying to geolocate it on a family tree. That's why I said woman, it was in my head. Don't want to get canceled. But that's that, right? Okay. Frankly, I don't know how much to read into this. The reason I think it's only worthy is because we have no other information, and from what we understand from other news gathering is that he's extremely close with his family, including his sister, who liked that comment from his grandma. And I don't know, his grandma's on Instagram. My grandmas are dead. It's just crazy how young these kids are.
Yeah, it's best not to think about.
And so, like, this is only news and drama if the comment itself and what I posted, and I'm still, like, split on whether I should have, is only, like, news if you make the A to C assumption that he was talking to his family about why he wasn't starting and why he felt like he wasn't starting. Because her comment, frankly, is a little bit pointed and specific. The right. fact that she says Bakrar, whom he brought in, it's like, why does she know that Bakrar was brought in, presumably under the guise of Cushing, and that Jovan was not? Like, that's what's most interesting to me, is that she was so, this woman was so specific about her, about, you know, that. That's, I just think that.
Right, that sounds like maybe that's a conversation that she's had with him. It's not like Jovan's grandma is on the blogs.
Yeah. But now we don't know. Again, I don't want to make the assumption because team employees listen to this podcast. But also, like, okay, so what is the issue? All I have is someone's grandma. I don't have anything else. So I'm going to go with what I have. So we'll see. I don't know. That percolating in my mind with one shot on target in the last five games and not scoring a goal in 808 minutes is like an $8 million. The number eight is coming. This is feels like it's the universe is telling us something. Is like, where is this kid? Why is he not playing? I don't know.
But what, this think? Is also not the end of the story. Do you know what I mean? Like, huh? That's an open question, not a conclusion. Even what grandma's saying is not like an explanation of what's going on. It's just it's sour grapes. The story here isn't, oh, this is why Jovan isn't playing. It's not why Jovan isn't playing, because he doesn't like him. You know, the story here is Jovan pissed? Is Jovan disgruntled? Is there some kind of a tension between the two of them that's more material just than somebody's like, yeah, getting waved off, right? Like, what's the nature of the tension is still an open question. There's a suggestion that tension exists. And of course, I mean, like, I would imagine that tension does exist. Or, you know, who knows? Maybe he'll go back and he'll be like, Gma, you need some media training.
Yeah, you can't, that's totally
you
possible.
You can't talk like that. But it's but really, the, like, it sort of opens. I think that the reason now it feels like, oh, it's open season or whatever, or why this feels like news is because the story is something's ill here. It makes it more likely that something's ill here on a personnel level and not just on a logistical level. And everyone's going to be curious as to what and why that is. It's not just a question of preference, right? You don't leave that player off the bench because you like Bakrar better. But is there something else? Is there some other flare-up? Or, right, like, is someone being taught some kind of a lesson because of pushback or, you know,
maybe grandma
like
doesn't
attitude
know.
Issues?
Maybe grandma doesn't know that he got injured in practice. Like, that could, it could be as innocent as that.
Sure, absolutely.
I don't, but we don't
but
know.
But we're waiting to find, we want to know.
Yeah.
And it's fuel to the fire. It's just fuel to the fire, that's all. Trey, yeah. The only other thing that I really want to talk, well, actually, let's talk about this. Maxi's back.
He is.
Team put out a little hype vid, what, about 5 hours ago. You'd be forgiven for forgetting that Maxi is still on this team. He feels like a specter from yesteryear. But the Spider-Man is back in training. I mean, is this going to change things massively at NYCFC? Maxi used to be the kind of player you built an entire team around, if you felt so inclined. Now we've got a lot of people who are jockeying to fill his shoes, to do what he did, even in, like, small ways that, like, add up to the whole of what Maxi has done. Can this veteran make a meaningful difference on this side in this season?
You tell me. I want to hear what you think.
I don't fucking know, dude. I have no idea. No, I guess my guess.
You're on a podcast. You have to take a side.
I guess my guess is no. Yeah.
Good. That's what I was going to say.
I think it's cool, but, like, if you're sitting here waiting for a return to the glory days, it's not going to happen. Maxi opening up lines of delivery or, you know, like making surgical passes isn't going to matter if the people who he gets the ball to still can't finish. Or if they're not disciplined enough to put themselves in positions to take advantage of what Maxi can do. And I don't know that we're seeing that. I think that this team is not going to be less messy because Maxi is back on the field. And I don't know that we'll see him start for a long time or most of the time. I just don't know. I guess a player like, I believe it. Like Maxi, it's hard to imagine him not starting, but at the same time, like, those legs can't run forever. Does Maxi eventually become a Pirlo type on NYCFC in this season? I could see it. Right? Send him out there, tell him he has permission to walk as long as he does something pretty every time. Maybe. But that's not going to change the tide of what it means to, you know, it's not gonna change this team's ability to get goals, not massively, I think, right? What needs to be fixed is not what Maxi's... What's missing is not what Maxi brings. Not really.
Yeah, I'll just say, a 37-year-old coming off an ACL injury, forgive me, but I'm just going to be conservative.
Ageist,
in
as
my
you've
head.
Been. This ageist and sexist, this
I'm
entire
gonna be...
podcast.
I'm going to be conservative in my expectation. And... if it works out, then it's all gravy, which is the phrase I was looking for last week, if you remember, when I couldn't think of what I was thinking.
It's gravy on top.
Yes, it's all gravy.
I see.
If he can contribute. But I'm not going to set my expectation like he's going to change the world. Would have been nice to have him in a game like Colorado at the end of the game to break down that low block, because we know he can. But outside of that, I don't know. I'm just going to be conservative about it. Also, no one making hay about Talis Bagnell being healthy, which I guess he's earned that reputation and that expectation, but I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And that's it. We'll leave it at that.
Exactly. I'm moderately excited. One more thing to talk about, Trey, and it's the NYCFC 2s. The Baby Blues
yes.
are back in form tomorrow for the Open Cup. Of course, they've been playing a regular season this entire time. We don't really talk about it. Because that's not what this podcast is about. We could talk about it, but we don't. Because what's fun to talk about on this team, of course, is how far are they going to make this Cinderella run happen in the Open Cup. We debriefed a little late from the last match against Hartford. which was a lot of fun. Now, as you've said in the past, we've got a pretty favorable matchup against Colorado Springs. Where do you place their chances? I mean, if they could beat Hartford, do you think that they've like got a strong chance against Colorado?
Hartford
threw ours away.
Yeah, Hartford is a better team than Colorado, and we are at home this time. But just keep in mind that Hartford game was a fucking miracle, and it's going to take a similar, not as drastic, but a similar kind of effort where we need to capitalize on our chances like we did in the last match and expect Colorado to provide a metric ton of pressure on our defense, and we have to hold strong. I'll be interested to see if Romero starts again. He did a great job against Hartford. Or are we going to see Rando, who's also been pretty good this year? Are we going to see... Barraza? The rules about loaning out players, obviously because MLS has completely fucked up this U.S. Open Cup, and we hate them for it because it's awesome. I'm not entirely clear on what the loaning strategies are. Obviously, we saw... Ojeda and Malachi in previous iterations of this cup. Can we see a Bakrar? Can we see a Talis? Can we see? I don't know. I have no idea. So, 30% of the people listening to this podcast are going to hear it after. More than 30% are going to hear it after the match actually happened. So I don't want to prognosticate too much, but it would be nice if we can get some first teamers in for this match, if only to alleviate some of the pressure that the team had to deal with against Hartford. But we know that they can at least survive because there's proof in what we've seen before. So it's just going to be another match of survive and thrive. Just can we get the ball up to Calhera and make him do his crazy shit? And JJ, who's been so impressive, can he do it? And then can the baby birds, like, we know they're mentally aware. Like, that's why I'm confident. It's like these young players have not shown any kind of mental fatigue or desperation or giving up when it gets tough. So I am confident, which is insane because we are the only MLS Next Pro team left in this competition. And it would be fantastic to beat yet another USL championship team. Two in a row would be awesome. And I can't wait. I can't wait to just watch and see what happens. But
how do you watch this match if you're looking to watch this match? Do you know where it's getting broadcast?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. US Open Cup should have some links. MLS should have some links. If you find them, just go ahead and I'll try to share it if I see it, because some links have like you have to log in or sign in, but there you can find the unlisted YouTube links should be around before the match starts. Or you can go to the game since it's in Queens.
Yeah, go. I'm not going to go. But that's not because I don't want to go. I want to be there. All right, we got one more thing, Trey. Last 5 minutes. Toronto. We're going across the border. We're going into enemy territory. We've got a match against Toronto this Saturday at 7:30 p.m. What are your keys to the match?
It's going to be tough, right? Because... the last time before this Colorado match that we played, oh, weird, we're playing two Colorado teams in a row.
That's what I'm saying.
I didn't realize that until now. The last time this team mentally looked unwell before this Colorado game was Toronto, right? When we choked away that lead. And that was like the nadir of this season thus far. At home, losing to Toronto, giving up a lead. So now we're in their territory. But if we learn from that first match that we should have won and didn't, we know that we can beat them. The interesting thing is that I think Insigne's been out ever since. He's not played. But they've looked better. I mean, they look good. This is not the first time. Look, I watched Napoli. I know that in some stretches of his time there, Insigne may have been a negative because... just because his usage rate is so goddamn high and he always wants and needs the ball, that if he has a bad game, then you're just going to have a bad game. So but he's so special enough that when he does have good games, which is most of the time, they look great. And also, if he can measure his usage, and I presume if he does play, they'll limit his minutes. I think they can come out strong. But the most revealing thing is that Bernardeschi has really reinvented himself. It's shocking. Like, I've watched him for years, but it's that now he's being asked to do so much. He's so different now. Like, he's being asked to do more, but in different ways. Like, previously at Juve and at every other place he's been, he's been a winger only attacking player, dive in, make some pretty crosses, beat some players one-on-one. Now he's being asked to defend, drop deep, play into the midfield, blah, blah, blah. So he's being asked to do more, but against, like, weaker competition, but with worse teammates. It's been really interesting to see how he fares, but last week he was phenomenal. He had, I think, 2 assists and a goal, or 2 goals and an assist, and one of the goals was a wonder. So he's really settled into this new role he has because I think he's realizing that, like, to be great in this league, you can't just do what you normally did in Europe at a high level, but you have to be a more complete player. And I think we've seen a lot of those European stars that come to this league figure that out, and it's been impressive. We've had them on this team before, and they will not be named. But it's so I'm terrified of Bernardeschi, of course, but you know, Kevin Artul's playing better. He's forcing his way up the field more, which I think is severely important when you're playing Toronto. It's like advanced positioning. Even in that Colorado game, we were shitty, but the consistency over the last month that we've been very good and one of the best teams in MLS is that we've held a high line of possession and a high line of attack. In no small part due to the emergence of Kevin O'Toole and Micha as ball handlers and creative outlets. So if they can do their thing as they've done and they can put this last result behind them, I do think we have a good chance because we should have won that last game. But it is an away game, so this team has not won on the road in Lord knows how long. So I'm not going to be overly optimistic, but I think we absolutely have a chance. For sure.
Yeah, but to me, that's, I think, what makes it so fucking important. I mean, every away game is important in that you have to bust that myth. You have to break that narrative, or else it's just like this team is. I mean, it's embarrassing. That metric, I think, is more embarrassing than we care to admit a lot of the time. That we can only put shit together when we are at home in like a comfort zone, and even then only sometimes. It's gotta get shaken up. We have to look like we can operate on somebody else's turf, or else I don't know, it's a walking shame.
The only other X factor here is the short week. That not only do we face Toronto, but then we face Philly midweek, and then we face Red Bull after.
You think there's a hold to pull off the, or to stay competitive for the derby or for the rivalry? I mean, it's sort of arguably it's the least sexy of the three matches.
Yeah, and in that case, I think you need to go all out so you can, any players you want to rest. Like, wouldn't Philly be a great game for Maxi to play? I mean, Nick Cushing loves to bring up 2022 playoffs as much as possible. Well, Maxi was like a fantastic player in the first 70 minutes of that match in Philly. So, like, would that be a good way to bring him in, is to start him in that match? I don't know. Like,
yeah.
If you're Nick Cushing, if I were him, I'd say go balls out against Toronto because that's the most winnable points of the three. Rest your starters against Philly because they're not as good as they used to be. And also, it's on the road against Philly. You're not going to expect something midweek, players tired, whatever. So you can go at as well as you can against Red Bull. I think that would be my approach to these three matches.
It'll be interesting to see if they take your advice, Trey.
Yeah, I don't know when we're recording next either. I know we wrote it down, but
we did. Well, I don't know when we did. I think we might have just. I think it might be at the end of the three. Let's see. Let's see so that people know when to expect something from us. That's one of the advantages. No, we're doing Sunday. So we'll do post-Toronto, and then we'll get Philly and Red Bulls. Boom, boom.
Okay.
And then so we'll appear have a better to answer. Have a gap for no particular reason heading towards New England. But probably I just didn't write it down. So we'll have an answer for you then. We'll see. And then we'll make some prognostications about the following two matches. You got sure. A prognostication for this match, Trey? A scoreline?
1-1.
Sure, I'll co-sign it. 1-1. Let's take it. I'll take a point away from home. Fine. Fine.
Yeah.
After a match like that, certainly. A win, better. I would love to see a draw, and I would really love to see a draw with a goal on it.
Yeah.
Trey, where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckard, and you can find us both at Blue Balls,
Blue Balls Pod.
The Blue Balls Pod, where we do all of our potting all the live long day. You can drop a dollar in the tip jar at cash.me/$BlueBalls or just by searching Blue Balls on your Cash app. You can check out the link in bio if you want to grab some merch, if you want to bio some merch is what I should have said. But all in all, we just like that you're here and we hope you keep on coming back even when this team sucks shit. We know most of you don't, but think about it this way. You could just listen to us instead of watching the matches. If you're sick of watching the matches and watching the team suck shit, we're more fun anyways. Put us on in the car, give us some plays, and give us a review. Or just send us some nice words. Or don't do fucking any of that, and we'll see you on the other end of Toronto. Thanks so much for listening, and we will catch you then. Goodbye.
Bye.